everyone, and welcome to the Leading in a Crisis podcast. On this podcast, we talk all things crisis management, and we deliver that through storytelling, lessons learned, and experiences as shared from experienced crisis leaders. I'm Tom Mueller. With me again is my co-host, Mark Mullen. Mark, welcome back.
Hello, Tom.
All right, our guest today is joining us from Washington State. He is Dan Smiley, and I'm going to hand it over to Mark in just a moment to introduce Dan. But he does bring deep crisis response experience, particularly in the maritime environment, and is the host of his own podcast called The Tactics Meeting, which also focuses on crisis management and crisis leadership issues. So, Mark, please welcome Dan to the podcast for us.
Sure, Tom. And again, it's my privilege to introduce Dan Smiley to join us on the podcast today. By my profession, the one thing I look for the most in a response is an incident commander who understands the dance and understands how to work with the JIC and with the PIO. And in all the exercises I've been at with Dan, I've been impressed that he gets it. He totally understands how we have to work together for the good of the response. So I'm looking forward to a conversation with Dan about incident command and the perspective from that structure into the JIC, and also his comments or understanding of the PIO role itself. So Dan, happy to have you with us.
Well, thank you, Mark. Thank you, Tom. I'm excited to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Dan, take just a minute and give our audience a quick summary of your bio. I know you've been working for a few years with a real focus in kind of maritime trades and that. So give us just a quick thumbnail of your experience and what you're doing today.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. I got here in a roundabout way. My experience was maritime. I joined the Coast Guard back in 1983. I was a bosun's mate. I sailed on the Coast Guard cutter Midget. And when that tour of duty was over, I sat for my deck officer's license, and I sailed passenger vessels and then freight vessels in Alaska until 1997, when in an attempt to not be gone 260 days a year and to stay married, I took a job as the captain of a little coastal oil spill response vessel owned by Clean Sound Cooperative called the Western Gull. It was tied up in Bellingham, and It was about a 15-minute walk from my house. So that worked out really well. So that kept me home. The staying married part didn't work out quite so well. But I stayed home, and now I'm in the oil spill response business, and I don't know anything about it at all. And I learned to skim oil and put out boom and do all those kinds of things. And then later I became the supervisor in Anacortes for Clean Sound, and then a supervisor for Marine Spill Response Corporation, and started going to tabletop exercises. I remember my first tabletop, all I did is sit with a yellow legal pad and keep adding up boom totals. I had no idea what I was doing. All I could think of was there's got to be a better way to account for these resources. This is crazy. And from there, I ended up as a response manager for MSRC. Like you, I was at Deepwater Horizon. I was in the on-water recovery group in Houma for 105 days. After that, I went to work for NJ Resources doing consulting. And today, I am the general manager of response and preparedness for the Washington State Maritime Cooperative. I'm also an associate on the response roster for Gallagher Marine Systems. I'm a podcast host of the Tactics Meeting, as you kindly mentioned, and have my own consulting business, Terminus Inc. So that's how I got here. I had no idea that I would spend all my time designing drills, going to command posts. I'm a ship driver by trade, but we all get here in a weird path.
Right. And all that history is good experience for putting you, you know, in a knowledgeable position within a unified command somewhere, right? Because that expertise that you develop over time, it can come into play in many different ways in a response. So the terrific background that you have for that. I wanted to talk a little tech with you if we could. And thinking about AI, it's the hot topic today. It won't be too long and it's going to decimate the planet and wipe us all out. But until then, I
Yeah, I saw
wonder
that movie.
until then, I wonder, if as you peek into your crystal ball looking into the future, what role you see for AI in the incident command process? And is there something there that responders today should be starting to think about in terms of how we make use of that emerging technology?
Yeah, that's a great question. I've been using ChatGPT myself for about 8 months now. I pay for the $20 a month pro subscription so that I have access to ChatGPT 4 instead of 3. And I use it in one way or another nearly every day. As some of you may know, I do some software development, and it's a really great tool for writing code that you can then just tweak a little bit and stick into your application. So I use it for that. It is a great tool for, I think, writing plans. And I haven't used it because I'm not a PIO, but I haven't used it for writing press releases. But if I was a PIO, I probably would. There was a response that I was on last year where I needed to write a pipe cut plan that had four components on it: a cut team, a lift team operating the crane, pollution mitigation team, and because of the risk of fire, fire watch. And we'd had a planning meeting that with all the parties involved, contractors and whatnot. And I had a lot of notes, and I decided, you know what, I'm gonna see what AI can do with this. I uploaded all the notes to AI and then I gave it some instructions. Say, write me a plan. It's going to be in four components. Here's a copy of the 201 so you can get some of the response information from it, and gave it a few more instructions and said go. And darned if it didn't get me 80% of the way there in its first try. I think if I'd have tried to write the entire thing from scratch, it probably would have taken me 5 or 6 hours. With the help of AI, I did the whole thing in 1 hour and 40 minutes.
That's
So,
amazing. And then I assume you kind of went in and did some final editing and tweaking to make it fully fit for purpose.
yeah, what I did is I took what it wrote and I dropped it into a Word document. And then I edited the first section of it, copied that, dropped it back into AI, and said, review this, edit it for clarity, remove any redundancies, and make any suggestions based on industry best practices for this kind of work. Interestingly, it came up with some ideas to include that I hadn't considered. And so I edited the document, put those things back in, and it went back and forth in this way, over the course of a half hour or so until I got it to a position that I thought met the objectives of the unified command. Then I slapped a cover page on it and we were off to the races. So I'm a big fan.
Wow. And so it sounds like there might be applications for writing an environmental plan or a beach cleanup plan and some more, but kind of across the incident command toolkit.
It's got access to a lot of knowledge. And if you give it good instructions, I think one of the keys to being able to use these large language models is to give it really good prompts. One sentence prompt probably isn't gonna get there, right? You might tell it, hey, you're the environmental unit leader in a unified command for an oil spill that's being managed under the Oil Pollution Act of 1990. I mean, give it a lot of information about, what is it's trying to do. The more you can give it, the better result it's going to be. And I think That's going to be one of the things that people are really going to be trying to learn to do. There's probably even going to be class, college level classes in this, is how to write a prompt, a question for AI that returns a, a useful
Coherent.
result.
So you're saying that in the long run, Tom, back to your question, in the long run, AI would be a great tool to use for your planning documents of any type, which becomes signed off documents, which become the base of response activities, which becomes what you see or what you do out on the water. So you're saying that Unified Command would trust, depend on, sign off on an AI generated document.
I don't know that I would present it to the Unified Command as an
Okay.
AI-generated document. I would use it myself as a tool. I like to think of it as a force multiplier. I'll use
Okay.
it for a tool to produce the document that I am then going to turn into the Unified Command. But it's my document.
Okay.
It's like using spell check in Microsoft Word, right? So is it not my document if I use spell
Right.
check? Is
Okay.
it not my document if I start with a report template that has been developed
Right.
in Word? Well, it is my document, right?
Sure.
So I see it as the same thing.
Right. Well, my only point was you use the tools you have, and you use the tools to increase your capacity as a force multiplier. All I'm asking is that it would be acceptable. There's no reason for you to think that it would not be an accepted plan because you used AI.
No, I wouldn't think so.
Okay,
Even if all
good.
I did is drop the a completed plan in and say, edit this, review this for spelling and edit it for clarity, rather
Sure.
than, I could do the same thing by dropping it into Grammarly or something
Sure.
like that. But the AI is going to make some very specific
Okay.
recommendations,
Right.
and I find it useful. Even if you don't use its recommendations, it's nice to be prompted to consider them, and you might
Right.
find that it prompts you to include a section in your plan that you wouldn't have otherwise. So
Right.
I think it's useful.
Dan, I used AI to develop the graphic for our podcast here. And it was way more frustrating a process than I expected it to be, because it took me about 50 different attempts to sort of get, what we see here now with our podcast logo. And I was just surprised. I thought it would be smarter, easier, faster, but it just, it built a little bit more every time I added or clarified prompts. But that's been almost a year ago now. I think if I went back to that same model, it would probably react very differently to the same prompts that I put in, just because the knowledge base and training of those language models is growing so significantly. You think that'd be true?
I know it's true. I've used it to generate a lot of graphics that I use in PowerPoint presentations, and it's improved dramatically just over the last 3 months. One of the things that I find quite interesting is that it almost never spells things correctly in the graphics. I don't know if it's trying to avoid copyright issues or not, but like I'll tell it, create an image of a middle-aged a white female wearing a white incident commander vest that is labeled, quote unquote, incident commander. And then it'll end up with incident commander that's got like three I's in it, like I, whatever. I mean, it becomes really weird. And if you're persistent with it, it's like, no, I need you to make the graphic look like this. You might get it right. In some cases, I've literally had to take the graphic, drop it into the slide, and then take a text box, put the label I want in it, and stick it over the graphic so that it's spelled correctly. But it creates some great graphics. I made one for an inject for the wildlife group, so that it was supposed to be a picture coming in from the public showing a duck swimming in a rainbow sheen water. And I mean, it was like great graphic. I use it. It freaked him out. But The news media are using these graphics. One of the news show, one of the articles about the Genius Star 11 ship fire showed this fire sitting at a dock at a container terminal, which was not the case, you know, with this, you know, AI kind of generated fire on board. And I guess they thought that was good enough. We have a ship, it's on fire. It was a fake picture, and nothing about the situation that they were showing was remotely true to the incident, right? There had never been
Interesting.
flames outside of the hull of the ship. There'd just been some smoke, you know, that, but
And that
I'm
was a
starting to
news
see.
organization.
It was in a news feed.
You know,
So you're
that's
starting to
right.
see these things pop up all over the place.
Yeah, you also got the potential for mischief around an actual response, right? Where you might have fake images of, you know, ducks mired in oil or something like that that could be generated and shared online as real photographs. Are we headed toward that kind of mischief now?
I'm sure we are. It's probably happened already. If we've been paying a lot of attention to the social media feeds around the Baltimore Bridge collapse, you may have seen that kind of thing. I'm not saying that I haven't seen it, but I'd be shocked if that kind of thing isn't out there already. So that's going to be a really challenge for you as PIOs, as JIC managers, as liaison officers. And not only now do you have to tell the story that's real, you have to go out and refute the story that's not. And that's going to be a challenge.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole other level of response here. You know, I guess it falls back to rumor control or, you know, that piece of the PIO team to try and keep track and refute those things. It's you talk about a force multiplier for misinformation, the potential there for mischief is just huge. Not
Right.
looking forward to that challenge.
No, or you know, they take a video, you know, create a deep fake video that is a version of the official press conference and have the unified command saying something completely different. And although I don't have any AI tools that'll do that kind of thing, they're certainly out there. We've seen some of that pop up on Instagram and other places in just a fun way. But you know, I'm not looking forward to the day we see presidential candidates saying crazy things because we're watching deep fake videos.
I'm not sure we'll be able to tell the difference.
If somebody's got the right hardware and software, we may not be able to tell the difference. That's going to be the problem.
Now, this is what happens when mischief intersects with technology because, Tom, you remember the Thunder Horse platform. And in that response, they were having to deal with images of some platform off Brazil that had actually sunk. So even back then, they were dealing with the reality that you can find imagery that counters the story and try to change public perception. So you're right. Now we can do it much more seamlessly and much more rapidly.
We're going to have to get smart in the technology that allows us to quickly deconstruct those images and figure out which ones are AI generated and which ones may be real. There's going to be an opportunity for personal growth for your PIO teams going forward.
Yeah, there's a whole new section of the JIC, right?
We'll
Yeah.
take the section that used to be, oh, the RP altered this photograph, and turn it into, oh, the citizenry altered this photograph.
That's right.
You're hitting kind of close to home there,
I
Mark.
know, sorry,
Please
Tom.
stop.
Probably need to back away and get the counseling going again.
Yeah. All right. Hey, Dan, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast today. Really appreciate you taking out some time, and it's been just a fascinating conversation. So I hope you'll find an opportunity to come back and join us again soon.
I'd be thrilled to do so. Thank you both.
Right. Thank you.
And that's going to do it for this episode of the Leading in a Crisis podcast. Thanks for joining us. If you like what you're hearing, then please like and subscribe to the podcast, and please tell your friends and colleagues about us as well. And we'll see you again soon on the next episode of the Leading in a Crisis podcast.